The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it.
And it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes, and welcome to the show. It is Wednesday, February 19th, 2014, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. We're so glad you could make it. Thanks for supporting us. Thanks for supporting everything we do here at 420 Radio. I encourage you all to check out the 420radio.org website and look in the top right corner in the control panel for donate/VIP. If you can become a VIP member and help sustain 420 Radio, we are kind of the public radio of marijuana legalization, and we need your help. You can join for as little as $9.99 a month. It comes out through PayPal, and it's all automated. You get all sorts of benefits, including some discounts at our 420 Radio shop and the potential to advertise on 420 Radio. Check it out, the 420 Radio VIP memberships today. We need your help to stay on the air. All right, on today's show, we've got all sorts of great content for you, including a very special guest, Michael Elliott from the Medical Marijuana Industry Group, will be joining us by telephone to talk about these recent guidelines that came down from the Department of Treasury and Department of Justice with respect to marijuana banking. Mr. Elliott says that the memo is not going to do very much good with respect to banking and pot businesses. He'll tell us why when we talk about legalization law and order at half past the hour. Also on today's show, we'll have time for a radical rant. And in the rant today, we're going to be taking a look at the rehabbers out there and how they are in complete denial about their rent-seeking behavior with respect to marijuana legalization. You've heard me rant about Kevin Sabet and about Patrick Kennedy. Another one of their buddies out there is Dr. Christian Thurstone, a rehab entrepreneur out there in Colorado. And I'm going to show you the statistics of why they are so afraid of marijuana legalization. Also on today's show, we're going to go behind the headlines where there's been a building momentum for these CBD-only bills, the Alepsia or the so-called Charlotte's Web oil that's high in CBD but very low in THC. Now there's a backlash that's forming amongst the medical marijuana community about these CBD-only bills. We'll take a look at that in Behind the Headlines. But first, we'll start with our 420 Radio news. And in the headlines today, we've got bad news in the state of California, good news in the state of Colorado, bad news in the state of Michigan, news from the state of Kentucky, and some archaeology news coming out of Turkey. Plus, it's our Daily Toker Tunes today, Ivy Wednesday. Gordon Green will be calling in with some great reggae from the Heptones.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
When you are starting up a medical cannabis business, you don't just want any attorney. You want a fired-up lawyer who understands the needs of cannabis consumers. The Law Office of Lauren Vasquez is your fired-up lawyer for the cannabis industry. Lauren Vasquez knows the details of California marijuana law from both a personal and professional angle. Lauren Vasquez rose from the ranks of college normal activist to become one of the Bay Area's best marijuana lawyers. Visit her website, firedublawyer.com, or call 1-855-MMJ-LAWS for more information. That's 855-665-5297 for Lauren Vasquez, your Fired Up Lawyer, or email firedublawyer@gmail.com. The number again is 855-MMJ-LAWS, 855-665-5297 for your Fired Up Lawyer, Lauren Vasquez. Lauren Vasquez is an activist attorney you can trust. Call today. 420 Radio, the home of marijuana experts. Hey, Tokers and Tokettes, Radical Russ here to introduce you to my friend Matt and all the staff at Lush LED Lighting. Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED Lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. If you thought LEDs were... meet the tech of today. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Let's just say I appear at a lot of events with the masters of indoor horticulture, and the harvests I saw from Lush LED Lighting were big, tight, sticky, and very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent ya. Double your rewards and lower your expenses with Lush LED Lighting.
This is your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 19th, 2014, brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition. I'm Russ Belville. Marijuana legalization for California in 2014 is likely dead. The Control, Regulate, and Tax Marijuana Act, backed by the big money of the Drug Policy Alliance, said they will stop gathering signatures for the initiative. Quote, "We decided it was more important to do it right than to do it fast," end quote, said Stephen Gutwillig, the Drug Policy Alliance's deputy executive director. Gutwillig also said, quote, "If we had a couple more months, we would have been able to do it," end quote, as DPA had raised enough money for signatures, but not the campaign. The Marijuana Control, Legalization, and Revenue Act is still gathering signatures, but accuses DPA's initiative of, quote, "sucking all the air out of the room," end quote, and stalling their fundraising. The campaign says it has raised $10,000 in a state where initiatives are estimated to cost $8 to $10 million to pass. The California Cannabis Hemp Initiative, pioneered by Jack Herer, also lacks any serious funding. Any initiative seeking ballot access to legalize marijuana in California would need over a half million valid signatures by the end of April. Colorado is reaping more marijuana tax revenue than they initially expected. In the governor's first budget proposal following commercial marijuana legalization, the state will spend $99 million raised from the 10% sales tax on pot, well above the $70 million voters were promised in marijuana tax revenue. Based on this figure, officials estimate sales of marijuana will approach $1 billion in the next fiscal year. Governor Hickenlooper proposes $45 million for youth marijuana prevention efforts, $40 million for substance abuse treatment, including $7 million for 105 new treatment beds, and $12 million in public health spending that includes almost $2 million for a Drive High, Get a DUI campaign. This is in addition to the $40 million raised by the 15% excise tax that is already earmarked by law for school construction. A lawmaker in Michigan is proposing a bill that would allow landlords to ban marijuana cultivation and smoking in their properties. The lawmaker, Rick Jones, a Republican from Grand Ledge, said, quote, "If you're going to smoke and bother people, you need to own your own home. If you're growing a mini farm, you need your own home," end quote. The Senate Judiciary Committee listened to overwhelming opposition to the bill from medical marijuana patients who explained that owning a home isn't feasible for many disabled people on fixed incomes. Landlords testified that marijuana smell in apartments is, quote, "going out into the hallways," end quote, and tenants, quote, "could still smell it in the ground floor," end quote. The bill only focuses on growing and smoking. Use of cannabis edibles, tinctures, topicals, and presumably vaporization would still be allowed. Jones's bill also bans the smoking of medical marijuana in, quote, any portion of private property that is open to the public, end quote, which would criminalize any kind of patient lounge or cafe. A lawmaker in Kentucky has introduced a bill legalizing the study of cannabidiol at state universities. Senator Julie Denton explained that, quote, there is anecdotal and some research evidence that CBD oil is very effective for children who have severe seizure disorders, end quote. Senator Denton also told reporters that she believes her bill focusing only on high CBD, low THC oil from marijuana will have a better chance of making it through the Kentucky legislature than a traditional medical marijuana bill that legalizes medical use of the whole plant and all its varieties. Senator Denton joins Florida Representative Matt Gaetz, Georgia Representative Alan Peake, and Utah Representative Gage Frewer in promoting only the form of medical marijuana that contains minimal THC. United Patients Group and other medical marijuana supporters, including Vanessa Waltz, writing for Ladybud magazine, are warning that, quote, by endorsing high CBD cannabis, new legislation will do more harm than good, end quote. Archaeologists in Turkey have uncovered the oldest known hemp fabric, dating at over 9,000 years old. The cloth was wrapped around the skeleton of a baby found buried in the ruins of a Neolithic city that once numbered 10,000 in population. Quote, the fire warmed up the ground and platforms of the building and created a kiln drying effect. Therefore, the pieces and this piece of cloth underground have been so far protected. Examinations in the laboratory show that this piece of cloth is linen weaved with hemp, end quote, said Professor Ian Hodder, head of the excavations. Prior to this discovery, the oldest hemp cloth was found in China, dating 7,000 years old. For comparison's sake, this 9,000-year-old hemp cloth is twice as old as the oldest Egyptian pyramid. This has been your 420 Radio News for Wednesday, February 19th, 2014. I'm Russ Belville. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available exclusively at the National Cannabis Coalition. Visit ncc420.com to download today. When we come back, we'll go behind the headlines and take a look at those CBD-only bills in Kentucky, Florida, Georgia, and Utah, and the growing reaction against them from members of the medical marijuana community. You're listening to The Russ Belville Show on 420radio.org. We'll be right back. I'm Radical Russ Belville, and I want to thank you for listening to 420 Radio. We couldn't survive without you and our sponsors, and I'd like you to check out one of our prime sponsors, the National Cannabis Coalition. I've been working with NCC since June of 2012, and I'm proud to be part of the team they have assembled. National Cannabis Coalition is building the partnerships with reformers, lawmakers, and industry we need to be successful. Visit the National Cannabis Coalition website at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or the easier-to-remember ncc420.com. That's where you'll get the exclusive first look at my radical rants, as well as informative articles from the nation's top cannabis pundits. Visit ncc420.com today, and if you have your phone handy, text Russ to 420-420 to support NCC and 420 Radio. It's a free text message that helps us help you end adult marijuana prohibition. Learn more at ncc420.com, and thanks for supporting independent marijuana legalization public radio.
I'm a reefer smoking man.
Woodpipe Smoke Shop and Speakeasy is your source for cannabis community gear in southern Wisconsin. Owners Brian and Tammy Wood are located in Kendall, just outside of Madison, and they've got everything for the smoking enthusiast, including a full assortment of pipes, water pipes, hookahs, bubblers, one-hitters, and so much more. They're open noon to 8 p.m. Monday through Saturday and can help you with your detoxification therapies as well. Call 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com for more information. That's 608-466-7473 or email woodpipes@yahoo.com. And as always, go Pack Go! Go!
Stony Sundays with Coral Reefer from San Francisco, California, every Monday at 5 p.m. Pacific, 8 p.m. Eastern, and 1 a.m. GMT, right here on 420radio.org.
Welcome back, everybody. 15 after the hour and time for us to go behind the headlines. And in the 420 Radio News, we told you of the introduction of this bill in Kentucky to legalize just high CBD cannabis oil. This is also happening in Georgia and in Florida and in Utah. Not Pennsylvania. And in fact, next week we'll be talking to a representative from Pennsylvania about their progress on medical marijuana. It was misreported, including by myself, that Pennsylvania had a CBD-only bill. That's not true. But for these other four states, they have these new CBD-only bills. And there's a growing outrage now from people in the medical marijuana community about this. It's kind of, they're learning that this push toward high CBD is in essence a re-demonization of THC. And there's so many patients that benefit from THC, from cancer to AIDS to glaucoma, PTSD, nausea, pain, so much that can be helped by THC, that these medical marijuana advocates are recognizing the CBD only is kind of leaving them out. Now, this is kind of ironic because for those of us who are healthy, we're the ones who've felt left out since all of these medical marijuana bills have been championed and didn't bother to include us in keeping us from being criminals. So we kind of know how that feels. I mean, it's CBD. It doesn't get you high. Must feel to them like I'm a patient, not a criminal, feels to me. But nevertheless, it's my hope that because of this, we'll start to recognize that we need to all be fighting together for the use of the whole plant, regardless of reason. And I'm glad to see that some patient groups are starting to stand up for that. The excellent writer Vanessa Waltz, writing in Ladybud magazine, has written a few pieces on this. One piece entitled "Why No Parent Should Support CBD-Only Legislation." And she does a good job of detailing how this CBD oil does have some THC in it, and differing patients with differing needs need more or less of that THC. And CBD by itself just does not work as well without THC involved as in it as well. Another piece she writes, "Alepsia plus Charlotte's Web plus extracted oil equals medical marijuana. Deal with it." And the most recent piece, "God Created THC, the Threat of the New Women's Christian Temperance Union." And I love the framing that she's put on this, because this recalls the temperance movement back in the 20th century when they were trying to ban alcohol, and it was largely predicated as a Christian movement, you know, to save the poor besotted drunks, right? Well, in this piece, she writes about the Stanley brothers and how they have been written about in the Colorado Springs Gazette. Now, Realm of Caring is the name of the group that the Stanley brothers put together. They're in Colorado. They're the guys that are growing that Charlotte's Web strain for all the kids that need the CBD oil. And in this recent article, he asks, he says, first of all, that we are not a bunch of stoners, and we do not associate with the stereotypes of what people would like to associate with us, end quote. That's Joel Stanley. And he continues by saying, quote, "If we were growing psychoactive plants for a bunch of potheads, then that would be the question. But what people should ask is, how did a group of Christians come to grow a plant for sick people?" End quote. Wow. Well, first of all, the Stanley brothers admit in that same article that they are that 30% of the cannabis they're growing is psychoactive. So I guess they're growing it for the potheads, right? I guess they're growing those psychoactive plants for the potheads. United Patients Group, another group, they just released a press release here on PR Web, where John Malanka, who's the founder and owner, says legislation that divides medical cannabis into the categories of good cannabis that doesn't get people high and bad cannabis that does ignores the many proven health benefits of THC and threatens patient choice. And very, very good point. And he also points out many parents have found that they have to play with the THC levels to reduce the seizures in their epileptic children. And children with other diseases, especially cancer, need THC. There's also some reference in here to the Cash Hyde Foundation and how Cashy Hyde was able to use THC to help deal with his cancer for the brief time he was alive. Of course, our own brave Michaela, who has dealt with her leukemia, is in desperate need of this THC. So I just hope that finally the medical marijuana community will recognize that continuing to fight for why we use marijuana can only lead to these kind of divisions amongst marijuana smokers. It's time to fight for legalization for every person for any reason they need it, including medical uses. Then the CBD people are protected too. You know, it's not as easy as just picking out one of them. You gotta have them all. It's frustrating, man. So we are going to engage in some testing of some high THC cannabis. We'll be right back.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? Have you ever met that funny reefer man? Reefer man. If he said he swam to China, he would sell you South Carolina. Then you know you're talking to that reefer man.
No Herb Thrasher from the Herb Thrasher Flower Hour. Now get ready for Herb Age Designs for the proud cannabis consumer. Herb Age Designs, lifestyle gear for the 420 friendly. Herb Age Designs, home of the famous lighter leash. Herb Age Designs, get your Herb Age t-shirts and hoodies and show your pride. Herb Age Designs, we've got frisbee golf discs and durable hemp gear. Herb Age Designs. We've got shot glasses, drinking glasses, coffee mugs, and beer cozies. Check us out on Facebook and online at herbagedesigns.com. And follow Herb Age and Herb Thrasher on Twitter. We'll see you at this year's Hemp Fest. Crank it up!
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Well, I say little darling, your words to little red coffee, you need a love that's gonna lay.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson, or Norman, and I smoke pot and I like it a lot. I learned a long time ago that marijuana is a lot safer than alcohol. There's nothing wrong with the responsible use of marijuana by adults. It's time we stopped arresting and started respecting those who smoke marijuana responsibly. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at NORML.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Irie Wednesday, featuring reggae, ska, and other world music genres. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
All right, welcome back, everybody. 23 and a half after the hour. Time for some Daily Toker Tunes. On Irie Wednesday, we like to get Irie with some good reggae music. And we're going to go to our phone line, where I hope we've got Gordon Green on the line. Are you there, Gordon? Nope, I'm afraid we don't have Gordon here for the day, so we're just going to go right ahead with the song. This is The Heptones. And, Brian, do you know anything about The Heptones by any chance?
Oh, yeah, classic reggae band. Great vocals. I love the vocals in The Heptones.
All right, let's check this out. This one's called Cool Rasta. Stay tuned. We'll be on the line with Michael Elliott from the Medical Marijuana Industry Group. Coming up next, we're going to talk about marijuana businesses and banking. Stay tuned.
Cool, oh cool, cool, right? was rocky road, we know. Oh, Rasta man, I live on. Hey, hey. So step by step, we'll go. We'll go. Jaja is a forgiver. Hey, hey.
The Russ Belville Show. Text the word Russ to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's Russ to 420-420.
In the afternoon, if I'm home, I smoke marijuana.
You're listening to Radical Russ. On the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, marijuana. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh, I got my ganja.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Cannabis Cure TV with Greg DeHote from Sussex, England, every Friday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, 2 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. GMT, right here on 420radio.org.
In the marijuana law reform movement, the cannabis community is represented by thousands of dedicated defense attorneys fighting to end prohibition and keep us free. The Russ Belville Show visits with the tireless courtroom crusaders in our Legalization Law and Order.
I'm going to switch things up a little bit on Legalization Law and Order today, in that we're speaking with a lobbyist, someone who's helping to shape the laws out there, Michael Elliott from the Medical Marijuana Industry Group. I hope that's you on the line. Are you there, Michael?
Can you hear me, Russ?
We hear you just fine. Thanks for being on the show.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
You know, the big news that we're here to talk about, of course, is the most recent guidelines that have been issued by the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, Department of Treasury, Department of Justice, all trying to get together to soothe the banking industry that up till now is pretty reticent to deal with state legal, both medical marijuana and recreational marijuana. And a lot of people said this was the green light for banking. You came out and said this is more like a red light. Can you explain what you mean by that?
Sure. Well, let's start off by saying it's certainly good news, and it's something that we should all be happy about, because it is an acknowledgement from the Obama administration and the Justice Department and the Treasury Department that that this is a serious problem that needs to be fixed. It's a, you know, security and safety and accountability problem. But really, you know, that language of the red lights that I put out there was really just me highlighting what the bankers are saying, what the Colorado Bankers Association and Don Childers have said here in Colorado, that this wasn't a green light, it wasn't a yellow light, this is a continued red light, and that as our members of our trade association here with the marijuana industry group, they've been calling up banks, and it's very frustrating. We're getting it from them directly that this is a continued red light.
And what's their reasoning behind this? They're just saying the guidelines don't go far enough?
Well, I think the simple thing is, you know, Russ, like this whole program, is, you know, with the Obama administration from the start, with the Ogden memo back in 2009, I believe, and then our memos afterwards, it's always been a low law enforcement priority. It's still federally illegal, but low law enforcement priority. And that's because, you know, the Obama administration can't just up and change the federal banking laws necessarily. And so that's really a lot of what this new memo is doing, is it's giving a path forward so that the banks it creates a new SARS sort of report form and a bunch of burdens on the banks that they want to go forward, a bunch of new forms that they have to fill out. But the point of the matter is, it's still illegal for them to do this. You know, forms or no forms. And, you know, imagine for a second here that that we have a president, Ted Cruz, coming into office in a few years. And what does that mean for the banks? How much protection do they really have? And, you know, we might look like a very a good industry to cultivate, to get the business, because we will be a very large industry. But the risk for the banks is, this is what they're telling us, is that, you know, their board of directors could be removed for getting into trouble for violations such as this. So there's a lot of uncertainty on their part, and I'm not sure that we're necessarily good enough or big enough for especially the big banks. We might have more luck with some of the smaller banks.
Gotcha. So it's a kind of a case where these banks feel like all they'd be doing is documenting their federally illegal activities for the next evil prosecutor or anti-marijuana administration that might come into office.
That is right. And that's what we're hearing from them, is just the frustration that this is actually worse than the things were before, because now it's requiring a lot more from these banks to really look into it and to verify. I mean, you know, some of it from one perspective is a very good thing. I mean, that, you know, we probably do want the banks to verify that they're, you know, licensed businesses that are that aren't drug, you know, drug cartels doing money laundering. But, you know, from the other perspective, it puts a huge burden on the banks to ensure that the money that they're taking is in fact legit. And that's not something that, you know, the banks necessarily want to be doing. They want to safe harbor. They want to be doing, they want this to be legal and not just, you know, ignored. They want it to be, you know, ignored, illegal and ignored. They want it to be legal. And that means, well, and it's part of the press release I put out there is Congressman Perlmutter, that this is a Congressman Perlmutter is a Colorado congressman who has a bill that would fix this issue. And perhaps we should talk about how likely it is that such a bill actually gets through Congress, but that would be one solution.
Now, for that bill to get through Congress, is this just identifying the banking issues? Is there anyone taking on the IRS 280E issues as well?
Well, that wouldn't be Congressman Perlmutter's bill. I know that there's a separate effort to fix the tax issues, and you know, I'm sorry, I don't remember whether there is a specific bill on that one or not yet, but that one seems like a much harder fight, because, I mean, the interesting thing about this whole banking debate is that, you know, the roles have actually been reversed. And, you know, I guess I'll back up a bit here and say, we tried to fix banking in Colorado back in 2012, and we've got 500 pages now of marijuana law in Colorado, of law and regulations. It's an awful lot of law and regulations. But we haven't been able to fix banking here. We tried back in 2012 with a bill that was a state bill that was sponsored by Senator Pat Stedman, who has been great for this industry. But we took it to committee, and quite frankly, we lost big time. And we lost because we were fighting against the cops and against the bankers. None of them wanted it. Nobody really wanted it. And the solution that everyone gave us was that we needed to go solve this issue at the federal level. But the interesting thing about that committee hearing at the Capitol was, you know, I sat there and watched cop after DA after representative of the Colorado Attorney General's office, and then the bankers all get up and say, you know, we'd really like to solve this issue, but this is federally illegal, and basically saying, you know, we don't really care if somebody gets killed over this banking issue. It's federally illegal, and we have a principled stand there that, you know, we just can't do this. And I got up and got to say that I'm on the side of public safety and accountability. And it's amazing how those roles reverse, because those cops, all of those people for decades now have said we cannot reform our marijuana laws because of public safety reasons. And for them to ignore the public safety reasons and for us, our side, to embrace it, to be on the side of public safety, well, that is an amazing change in momentum and in rhetoric. And you just see it when you look at the national media and how much traction this issue is getting. Well, we are on the side of public safety, and people get it. And I haven't seen one person publicly saying that we shouldn't fix banking. And I think the reason is because that is not a credible position to have, to be against, you know, safety and security and on the side of, you know, violence and you know, the lack of accountability.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. We're speaking with Michael Elliott from the Medical Marijuana Industry Group. And one irony that strikes me as we discuss this banking issue is how all these bankers seem to be all so ethical and wanting to follow the law when it comes to marijuana money. But just wasn't it 4 or 5 years ago, they trashed our economy in the subprime crisis and did billions and billions of dollars worth of crime. HSBC's been laundering drug money. They got slapped on the wrist for that. I mean, suddenly they're all ethical. What do you think of that?
Russ, I'll let you be the one to criticize the banks. I'm in the business of trying to forge a banking relationship with some of these folks and show them that, you know, that they don't really have much to be fearful of, and that we are in fact legit businesses, and, you know, folks that have passed background checks and done financial disclosures, and then, you know, we're complying with all these regulations with seed to sale tracking and all these ownership and residency requirements and all of, you know, the financial disclosures about where all the money's come from. So these are very transparent and accountable businesses. And I think that's just, you know, our main point to the banks is that, you know, that we're transparent, we're accountable. It's okay to do business with us, and we're going to be excellent customers, and that's going to be a benefit to them. But I think right now they're seeing all the risk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, in that Colorado budget that we just saw dropped today or yesterday, I guess it was, they're showing $99 million that they've made that they're going to be spending on various programs, and estimating $1 billion revenue or $1 billion sales in the next fiscal year. So do you think that as the money builds in this industry, that the momentum will just kind of be unbearable for them? They'll just have to do something at some point. And would you bother to guess how soon that might be?
Well, that's a really tough question. I think, you know, you see all this momentum to fix banking right now, and it's, you know, it's coming from people that, quite frankly, were opposed to Amendment 64. Like our Governor Hickenlooper and his office have been right at the lead of trying to fix banking, and so is Mayor Hancock here in Denver. These are people that were very, very outspoken against Amendment 64, but see the need to fix this. And then our congressional delegation is getting on board as well. And, you know, this isn't a partisan issue. And so we have all this momentum, and that memo was supposed to, you know, was supposed to address the issues, but it hasn't. And, you know, maybe things loosen up here when the media dies down, and maybe some of these smaller banks will get a bit more comfortable. But the point is that there is all this momentum to fix this issue. And, you know, it seemed impossible to get anything through Congress, but wow, is there a lot of momentum on our side. And, you know, maybe the impossible is now becoming possible because of, you know, you can't argue with the fact that this story has been covered in the New York Times and CNN, and, you know, all the national media outlets have covered this story in the last few days. And people want this to get fixed. There isn't a good reason not to fix it. We just are having to deal with this Congress that is the most ineffective Congress in the history of the United States. So.
Yeah, no kidding. All right, one last question, and this may be a bit of banking 101, but it's a common response I get from people in my chat room or in the comment sections when I write about this issue. And it's about, why don't they just form their own credit union or their own bank? Can you give a brief explanation why that's kind of impassable?
Yeah, well, that's what we tried to do in 2012. The idea was that we were going to create a state-chartered, state-insured bank. And, you know, the part of the whole Colorado program here is that we're rooted in the 10th Amendment of the United States Constitution, that this is a states' rights issue, we're a laboratory of democracy, and that we should be able to do that and not have our program interfered with. But you get back to the point that when we're talking about federal law and the Bank Secrecy Act and federal money laundering laws, that even if we did all that, that bank, state chartered and state insured, would still be violating federal law. So that's one issue. And, you know, the other issue to it, too, Russ, is that, I mean, when we tried this, I told you that the banks came out against it. Mm-hmm. And, well, you know, we have kind of a don't ask, don't tell relationship with a lot of these banks where they get the benefit, but they just want to be able to deny that they know anything about it. and creating a solution that locks out the current banking industry, well, you can see why these banks might not want to create something that actually solves this problem and takes the business away from them. And so there's a lot of frustration there, and it seems like a state bank should work because, hey, this whole program is having the same federal issues that bank would have, but we're willing to take that risk. And so far, it seems like the banking industry hasn't been willing to do so.
All right. Well, Michael Elliott with Medical Marijuana Industry Group, before we let you go, would you give our listeners some contact info, maybe Facebook or web pages where they could get more information?
Russ, are you still there?
Oh, sorry about that. Michael's just hoping that before we let you go, if you could give out any information to our listeners on the web where they could learn more about the issue or contact your group.
Well, sure. So we are the Marijuana Industry Group now. We just changed our name. So our website is MMIG.org because we just changed it for Medical Marijuana Industry Group. Our website isn't really much of a resource, but we've got some contact information on there if people want to reach out to me directly. But yeah, thank you for this opportunity, Russ, and we'll see. This is there's a lot of momentum. It seems impossible for things to stay where they are right now, but also impossible for them to go anywhere either. This is a really bizarre and difficult and complicated issue. So yeah. It'll be fascinating to watch.
All right, Michael, thank you for your expertise and representation on the issue, and we'll be back in touch when we know more about what's going to happen with banking.
All right. Thank you, Russ.
Thank you very much. All right. When we come back, we'll have time for a radical rant. I got a response from a rehabitionist, telling me I'm in denial. So I'm going to talk to you a little bit about denial and what the rehabbers are in denial about when we come back.
We'll be right back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers, because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
Ever wonder how often to change your bong water? The most effective method for baking pot brownies? The best destinations for a ganja getaway? How to hide herb in your car? Whether to grow your own? How precisely to legalize it? Or how something as wonderful as marijuana ever got to be illegal in the first place? Finally, you can find all these answers and much more in the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook, featuring 420 things to do when you're stoned. Since 1974, High Times Magazine has covered marijuana in all its aspects and wonders, from cultivation to legalization to the herb's enduring and exalted place in popular culture. Packed with inside information, the official High Times Pot Smoker's Handbook wove all of this collected wisdom together into a single indispensable ganja guide, including an entertaining look at marijuana's history, profiles of herb-friendly travel destinations and festivals, favorite potluck recipes from the High Times staff, smoking skills, advocacy and activism, essential marijuana movies and songs, profiles of famous cannabis strains, comprehensive growing information, celebrity endorsements, and much more. This is truly, finally, the ultimate guide to green living.
420 Radio, fighting prohibition since 2012.
The judge allows in evidence that Trayvon Martin did have marijuana in his system at the time he died. What difference, if any, does that make?
It's because I've seen too many felonies, and I don't mean pot sales or growing pot like this guy up in Connecticut.
To me, it means that he is less likely to pick a fight with someone.
I mean, people on pot shoot each other.
Isn't it true that when you smoke pot, you just want to lay on the sofa and eat?
People on pot kill families, wipe out a whole family.
The common connotation, pot goes with lethargy, with the munchies, with wanting to eat, with being laid back, not with chasing somebody down, jumping out from behind bushes, beating them in the head till they're pulpy, and basically starting mortal combat. That's not what you typically equate with smoking a doobie.
I've got to be drinking booze, or I've got to be smoking, or I've got to be high on pot.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended a Shaolin temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
All right. Well, I wanted to refer back to a post on my RadicalRust.com blog. It was something I wrote a while ago, actually, last May, called The Ongoing Reefer Madness of Dr. Christian Thurstone. Thurstone is this rehab entrepreneur in Denver who's got his own Dr. Thurstone blog, and he writes some pretty outrageous things. And this article focused on one part where he was actually talking about how the next thing that kids might do is be injecting THC. Going straight to the needle, right? So it's crazy, of course. Don't really need to go over that. You can read the piece on the RadicalRust.com if you'd like to. But in the piece, I went back to the National Survey on Drug Use and Health and came up with some numbers, you know, about what the demographics of pot smokers are. And I just want to go back and remind you of these. In 1979, people aged 12 to 20, that'd be below the 21 age that's proposed in a lot of legalizations. People aged 12 to 20 in 1979 made up almost 39% of marijuana smokers. By 1991, that proportion had slid down to just 30% of all marijuana smokers. And now in 2010, which is the most recent survey up to that time, people aged 12 to 20 make up only 25% of all monthly marijuana smokers. In fact, there are almost 4 million fewer monthly marijuana smokers aged 12 to 20 now than there were in 1979. Not per capita. Like, overall raw numbers, there are 4 million fewer 12 to 20-year-old marijuana smokers now than 1979. So I brought up these statistics, you know, and I had some research from on marijuana withdrawals that I brought up. A pretty long post, and I've got a ton of links in there, you know, to the different research papers on marijuana withdrawal and the potency of marijuana and, you know, fairly well-researched piece, right? Well, this piece been sitting for a long time. It just got a comment yesterday from a guy who goes by the name of Family Man. And this is the comment. Russ, you're in denial. Dr. Thurstone is 100% correct. But don't let his views harsh your buzz. Just don't drug and drive and don't get kids on it. Thanks. Oh, a little condescension with your ad hominem abusive. Very nice. Very nice. Okay. So this is the idea that ad hominem abusive, it's one of the logical fallacies that basically says we don't have to listen to what you're saying because you're just a fucking pothead. That's basically what it is, right? And of course, we all know denial's a river in Egypt, but that's an old joke. Let's take that at its face. Let's suppose I am the poster child of marijuana addicts. After all, I smoke pot every day. All day. Like, I wake up, I smoke some pot. I do some writing and research, I smoke some pot. I do a show and I smoke some pot. I post-produce the show and I smoke some pot. And then I go sit up on the couch and watch some TV and I smoke some pot. So, guilty as charged. Let's just give them that. Guilty as charged. I'm a marijuana addict. Can you refute the data and the assertions and the research that I said in the previous post? This whole thing of denial is the instant go-to for any rehabitionist who's losing an argument. Oh, well, we don't have to listen to what you're saying. You're just a pothead. No, you do have to listen to what I'm saying because I've got the facts and data because I look shit up. It doesn't matter whether or not I'm a marijuana addict. It doesn't matter what you think of my marijuana use. What matters is the facts, data, science, reason, and logic we're laying out here on a day-to-day basis and the plain demonstrable fact that you got no answer for it. That the rehabbers got no answer for this. Folks, the only denial that's going on here is the denial of the rehabbers on their rent-seeking behavior, on their need to keep marijuana prohibited in order to keep the grant money flowing. Marijuana addiction is a cash cow for these rehabbers because pot smokers are more likely to have jobs and insurance to pay for rehab, and they're the least likely to relapse if you threaten them with P-tests back by jail. Their success at breaking this addiction also helps to boost the stats for these rehabs when they're seeking funding. And let's not forget the P-testers who make a lot of money because pot positives make up the majority of their business. And if businesses had to measure their drug testing budgets against the very rare cocaine, meth, or heroin positives, they'd be a little less likely to be getting return on their investment, a little less likely to keep on drug testing. And as far as this condescending tone about, you know, me just being a pothead and, oh, don't teach kids and don't drug and drive, as if I promote that. As if I promote people getting high behind the wheel. I'm the guy whose voice is on all those public service ads you listen to throughout the day telling people not to smoke and drive impaired. And as far as getting kids high, you're the one supporting the status quo where 81 to 90% of kids for the past 3 decades now have said it's easy or fairly easy to get marijuana. You're the one supporting the status quo where 44% of high school kids know a weed dealer at school and 1 in 5 high school seniors smoked pot this month. I'm the one who's proposing putting the pot behind adult-only stores and checking kids for ID. And the most annoying part of this has to do with the very obvious statistics that show how marijuana users are funding the rehab and drug testing industries. This is information from the 2011, what they call the treatment episode data set. And what it does is it tracks the 1.8 million people in rehab. Now there's actually 2.6 million people in rehab. TEDS A, as it's called, only tracks 1.8 million of them. Those are the ones because all rehabs in the United States who receive any sort of public funding have to report to this database. And in some states, they have laws that require the private rehabs to also report. Okay, so about 1.8 million of 2.6 million rehabbers, or about 60% of the rehabbers, are counted for in TEDS A, and we have no reason to believe that the other rehabbers, the other 800,000, would be any different than these statistics. So out of those 1.8 million in rehab, 1.1 million of them didn't use marijuana. 695,000 of them did use marijuana. Now, they might use marijuana and alcohol, marijuana, alcohol, and meth, marijuana, alcohol, meth, cocaine, and heroin, you know, could be any combination of it. But about 60% didn't use pot, might have been drinkers, might have been coke, heroin, whatever, or combinations. 60% didn't use marijuana, 40% did use marijuana, and you can see on the screen right now how it breaks down in rehab referrals. For the people who didn't use marijuana, 41.6% of them checked themselves into rehab versus 28.1% of them who were forced there by a court, the criminal justice system, or because they got a DUI. Got that? So it's much more likely if you didn't smoke pot, it's more likely you admitted yourself to rehab than were forced into rehab. But when it comes to the 695,000 who used marijuana, 24.7% were self-referrals, 43.9% were court criminal justice DUI referrals. In other words, it's much more likely if you smoked pot that you will be forced into rehab by a court than choose to go there yourself. And we can even tease this data down further. If we take a look at people who only checked in for one drug, one drug or alcohol. They could have checked in as an alcoholic, right? Alcohol's a drug. Checked in for one drug. There are 642,000 people whose one drug wasn't pot. Could have been meth, could have been coke, could have been heroin, could have been alcohol, whatever. There are 143,000 people in rehab whose only drug was pot. Only drug they checked in for was pot. When we look at those people who didn't smoke pot, their criminal justice and self-referrals are about equal. 33% for criminal justice referrals, 39% for self-referrals. People who used a drug or alcohol were still more likely to admit themselves than be forced there by the criminal justice system. But in the case of people whose only drug was pot, criminal justice referrals were more than half of all those people in rehab. Were about 70,000 people in rehab for marijuana alone who were forced there by the criminal justice system, compared to 14.3% who were self-referred. What that tells us is that you're about four times more likely to be forced into rehab for pot alone than to go there on your own. That means if we legalize marijuana, the rehab industry risks losing four patients for every one who checks himself in. Now, furthermore, there's some other categories here of what gets you into rehab. Schools, employers, and community referrals versus rehabs and healthcare referrals. In the case of people who didn't smoke pot, it's more likely that a doctor sends you to rehab than your school or employer. But if you smoked pot, it's more likely your school or employer sends you to rehab than a doctor. And if we narrow that down to people who just use one drug, a doctor is more likely to send you to rehab if you're using a drug or alcohol. But in the case of people that are smoking only pot, three times more likely that your school or employer is going to send you to rehab than a healthcare provider. Only 7% of the people in rehab for marijuana alone were sent there by a healthcare provider. So this shows us that marijuana users, people who use marijuana only, are twice as likely to be sent there by a court than to be self-admitted. If they only use marijuana, they're four times more likely to be sent there by a court than be self-admitted. And marijuana users admit themselves at half the rate of drug users. Oh, and as far as that marijuana addiction goes, of those people, the 700,000-ish who are in rehab for marijuana, about a third of them toke on the weekends or less, once or twice a week or less. And over a third of them did not toke for the entire 30-day period prior to their rehab admission. So much for addicts. And you can bet if P-tests and illegal marijuana charges weren't forcing us to go to marijuana instead of going to jail, the rehab numbers for marijuana would plummet, as well as their paychecks. That's all the time we got for Hour 1. We got more coming up in Hour 2, including an incredible story of a student being busted for smelling like pot, and more. Colorado drug testing guidelines as well, and news from Oregon. For Brian the Red, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us, and until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you